presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. I'm John Comerford, and joining me on the big panel is...
Hello, everyone. I'm Marissa Serafini.
Good afternoon. This is Sarah Stratton.
Hello, it's Dimitri Panos.
And also with us is...
Hello, everybody. Phil Svitek from the booth.
There it is, from the booth. Thank you. And so this week we have Tom Helms.
Tom Hanks does helm a ship.
He does helm a ship.
That's what I was going for. Tom Hanks, yes, he takes to the high seas and he helms a cargo vessel off the Somali coast.
But I know it's
by pirates and Captain Phillips. So let's get right to our overall reactions and immediate feedback. What are we saying?
I really like this, especially because it's based on a true story. It's always interesting how they portray something that was real, and I think they did a really good job, and I felt I was in the action the whole time throughout the movie.
Nice. Sarah.
So, going into this, I had had the reviews of, this is the best movie, and people telling me that I was going to be on the edge of my seat the entire way through. So, for the first 20 minutes, I was like, oh no, I got my expectations, like, too high up. I'm like, this isn't going to... I had this huge sigh in the movie, like, it's not going to meet it. It's just not going to meet that level. And then it just kind of swept me away because you get so caught up with it. So, I loved how they mastered just the build and the suspense, and it really does leave you... at such an emotional and wonderful place. So overall, fantastic.
Nice. Dimitri.
Yeah, I really like this movie a lot. I sort of break it down. For me, it was like two different movies. There was the hijacking of the ship, getting on the ship, the hijacking, and then there was the lifeboat. And to me, they were like two different films. I liked it because it is based off of a true story and this really happened. Compared to what we're sort of primed when we go to an action movie that a ship that big and there are only four scrawny guys who are going to hijack this thing. No way is that going to happen, but it did. And it really shows how that was done, where just four 80-pound guys can come on board and really hijack a huge ship. I like that.
Never underestimate an 80-pound guy.
Yeah.
Phil, jump in here. What do you think about this?
I mean, honestly, this was quite possibly one of the best movies I've seen. The acting was phenomenal by Tom Hanks and everybody else. It had elements of Catherine Bigelow's Hurt Locker and also Zero Dark Thirty, but then it also has human side to it. And plus, by the way, I'm a huge fan of Whale Wars, so it had elements of that as well, for those who are familiar. So, you know, I've known about piracy for a while.
Yeah, wow. That's a raving endorsement.
Did I miss the whales in this movie?
Yeah, he doesn't often get that animated about a movie.
I didn't see much.
Our life on the ship.
Well, for those of you unfamiliar, Whale Wars is about it's a documentary TV series about the Sea Shepherds going against anti-whaling with the Japanese.
Basically, if you like Captain Phillips and you want a TV show to watch,
it has some piracy kind of aspects to it, so I think that's what Phil's referring to.
It has that lifestyle on a ship.
Yeah.
But I just finished watching it about an hour ago. So I was very tense. My heart was pumping. I liked it very much, so I would recommend it. I love Paul Greengrass. Yeah. So anyway, let's jump into this a bit more... to how this became a movie. We obviously know this is a real story. We've just talked about that. It really occurred to Captain Phillips. But Dimitri, let's expand upon that. What have you done? What have your researches?
Well, why don't we start off with we'll start off about the movie itself. Its release came out Friday, October 11th. Mm-hmm. It's distributed by Sony, and it actually had a very respectable opening weekend. Mm-hmm. It did about 25.
It's nice to open a movie with Tom Hanks.
That doesn't work all the time.
Not always, but it's a good bet.
What was it? The Crowning? What was that movie?
Okay, let's stay on this one.
No, but. You know, sometimes it helps, but it came in at $25.7 million, came in number two. But the overall production budget was $55 million. Mm-hmm. When you include throw in P&A, it was estimated at $88 million all in. So that's not too bad. It's $36 million. Mm-hmm. So, they're on their way. They have some really positive word of mouth going for them. And we also have Paul Greengrass. You remember last time when we were talking Gravity, mm-hmm. and someone mentioned that you could tell, like, Alfonso Cuarón has made, you know, he's made his bones, and you can point out an Alfonso mm-hmm. Cuarón movie. I think Paul Greengrass is the same way. He's shaky cam.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you either love it or hate it. So he's back, and he had, like, you know, when asked about why he chose this particular topic, he actually had three really good reasons. Number one, he thought that this was a fantastic crime story that had some great twists mm-hmm. to it. And I agree, once I thought of it that way, yeah, it truly is a crime story. He was also looking forward to working together with Tom Hanks. They've known each other, never had the opportunity to do so. So I think that that's pretty cool. So he got that to cross off his list. Thirdly, his dad was a merchant marine. So uh-huh. he had familiarity with what it was like to have a family member go off to sea for, so, you know, for months on yeah. end. And he wanted to explore that world. So I find that fascinating. You know, I think that's pretty cool. So he actually brought some of his own personal life to it. And he found this to be a good, true story to work with. So,
yeah, that's one of the things I liked about it, is because he really did. You know, I didn't know that story. Thank you for finding that out. I didn't know that Paul Greengrass had a father. Did you just say father?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was in the Merchant Marine.
Yeah, he was Merchant Navy. Yeah.
Exactly. So I had no idea. And again, I like to go on what I call my media blackout when I know I'm going to see a movie. I don't want to read or know anything about it. I just want to go and see what, have the movie come to me. So, but because he had that, I'm sure that's why we had all that nice stuff at home and see the mundane aspects of their life when, you know, he's just getting ready to go to, yeah, I'm just going to work. And they're just going to work. Yeah, this is our life and all that. I liked that bringing to it because he's just an every guy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought that that was one of the great points of the movie. Whenever we think of a ship's captain,
yeah.
it's usually very militaristic, whether mm-hmm. it's future, but, you know, when we're grounded.
Unless it's Captain Steubing from way back when. But go
ahead. No, but even Captain Steubing had a uniform, so to speak, yeah. right? These guys are definite blue-collar kind of guys.
Union guys.
Yeah, they're union guys. Mm-hmm. Captain Phillips himself, in the movie, there was only one time where he actually had his stripes on his
yeah,
shoulders.
Yeah,
that was at the beginning.
Same.
It was basically polo shirts mm-hmm. and, you know, boat shoes, so yep. to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and I liked that aspect. We've never really seen, like, this is like blue-collar kind of work. And in, to a sense, I have to geek out. It sort of kind of reminded me a little bit of the crew of the Nostromo and Aliens, because mm-hmm. our alien,
right.
those people were blue-collar yep. miners, workers, and stuff like that. And here we're getting the real deal, and I like that.
Well, that
I
was
that
part
aspect.
Of the beauty of the movie. It was yeah. just they weren't forcing it. They weren't forcing this to be dramatic or high stakes in the beginning. They were really just taking you through the lives of these people and getting you to how they got there on both ends, not only with Captain Phillips and all of the other crew and just their normal routines, but also with our pirates. You got to see why they were there. You got to see their viewpoint, their lifestyle, what's brought everyone to this crazy event.
Yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. And I loved how they showed the two aspects, the two different lifestyles, like you just mentioned. You saw the blue collar aspect, and Tom Hanks actually said when he was preparing for the role that he talked to the real Captain Phillips. He yep. visited his house in Vermont, and to get the breakdown and the routine of what he does as a person at home, his home routines, and then what he does on the ship when he's actually there.
Sure.
So in the movie, we see the whole aspect of the lifestyle on the ship, and then we see the Somali pirates and right. their home and how it's so drastically different from our two different cultures.
Yeah, and it's, and they're two different captains, so yeah. to speak. Yeah, you yeah, can look at it as, you know, a story of two yeah. different captains and how they become into captaincy, or at least mm-hmm. for our Somalian friend there. You know, it's just very interesting. You know, it's right makes might, or might makes right.
Right. You know, we were talking about how this became a movie and everything. Obviously, it became a movie because it actually happened. And we'll get into the controversy that people have talked about, or what's happened in real life since. But what I want to talk about is just a little bit of controversy, just with the story, just the idea of Paul Greengrass getting a little bit of flack for telling the story or showing where the Somali pirates came from. And it's like,
I think that's ridiculous.
I do, too.
I think that how you, the best way that I can embrace a movie is when you are slightly rooting for everyone involved.
Yeah.
I mean, there are points in this film where you're just like, yes, the Navy's here.
Yeah.
Yes.
yeah.
And you're part of you, like, wants to chant. You're just like, America, save the one
right.
guy.
What took
but
so
then,
long?
yeah. But then at moments, I really felt for some of the guys, especially, I'm going to pronounce the name wrong of the character, Blanc.
Muse? Musi
no,
or
Muse? No, the young kid who got his feet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who got his feet cut open.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wanted him to make it out of there.
Oh, didn't you?
So
I know, absolutely,
bad.
Absolutely.
And that's incredible. Because even, and that's
Captain
great.
Phillips did too. So.
But it's interesting, and I guess we can approach that later when we talk about controversy.
Well,
but,
let's talk about this controversy a little bit more, because, you know, in most movies, the bad guys don't get a backstory. So they might get a little explanation about why they're doing what they're doing, but you're not really empathizing with them. You're not trying to sympathize with them, you know, and in this movie, I don't know that a little bit of flack, and again, it's not blown out of proportion.
Sure,
but the flack they were getting is, you know, why are you humanizing the pirates? And I'm thinking, what that first of all, it makes it a way better story,
absolutely.
And for me, it didn't I should say it showed their desperation more than anything. And what worse attribute can you have to a bad person, bad guy, than having them desperate? They've got nothing to lose.
Yeah,
which makes them even scarier.
Yeah, but I liked how they kind of touched upon where they came from.
Yeah.
They were literally picked out of a group. They didn't voluntarily join together. They were picked. So they're
hanging outside of Home Depot.
From the beginning, they were forced to be together. And you see throughout the whole film that they're still trying to work with each other. Mm-hmm. And then to show that background and where they came from, it doesn't justify their actions, why they took over the ship.
Sure.
But tells the audience why they did it.
But makes it understandable.
But I think some of the controversy is stemming from that Captain Phillips, the real Captain Phillips himself, has said, no, I've had no sympathy for one of those people.
Yeah. And no, like, should you, they were, I don't have any sympathy for what they did.
From a script standpoint, I get it. And again,
But here's what, because, you know, obviously this is written from the book and from real life events. So, but obviously it's inspired by, so it's not a documentary. So we're not going to get the actual facts. But I'm just saying, dramatically speaking, that's where these people came from.
Absolutely.
I don't think it's a far stretch to go, this is how where they grew up. This is the environment they're living in. This is what causes their action. I don't think that's a big stretch, nor do I think it in any way detracts from your story. I think it adds to your story.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I can quote, like, Paul Greengrass as saying, to some of the minor changes here and there, what they had to do, which led to some of the controversy. I mean, he basically says, you know, movies are not journalism.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, they're not history, so to speak. It's not a documentary.
No, at all. But do you think it was was it risky to do that? Because we normally don't see that from that perspective from, let's say, the bad guy.
I just think that it lent to some dramatic.
Mm-hmm. Did it make a fuller movie for you guys?
Yeah.
Completely. Okay. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Because we know that usually good always overcomes evil, but this movie shows that everyone's human.
I think for me... Go ahead, Sarah.
And even just looking at the Somalia Pirates as a group, you felt different emotions towards each one.
Absolutely.
Each one was an individual, and that just enhanced the fact that they weren't really working together.
Yeah,
so the fact that you could develop a different relationship with each one,
they weren't cookie-cutter terrorists or pirates.
That was great. You're not like, oh, that group of people
exactly.
is that.
It's
each person is a person, just like everyone on the crew was... Each person was a person.
That was most interesting about the.
I would say a little. See that was, I guess, my thing too. Is that I didn't really at the beginning, I didn't really get to know the crew all that much, other than they were union people, you know. And even to that point, you don't know too much about Captain Phillips and whatnot. That's why I think for me, the heft of that movie came in the lifeboat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's where even more of those relationships that are causing the controversy came from, is when they were in the lifeboat. I think that's the most important aspect of the movie for me anyways, because I really didn't care that much about the crew other than, you know, they were hiding for their lives and everything, but you didn't get to know them.
You know, again, the acting all around was excellent. I mean, I love Chain and things like that. But Tom Hanks, you know, he got out on this movie, obviously, because, you know, he loved the script from back in 2011 when it was first presented to him. And I don't know whatever phase it was at that point.
The first draft.
But meaning story-wise, you know what I mean? I don't know how complete of a movie it was to what we actually got to see. Now, that being said, you know, I think... In terms of the other crew members, it's not, yes, they're hiding for their lives, but it's about how Captain Phillips reacts to what's going on in order to protect his people. So as much as we didn't necessarily see, you know, the crew members, we saw as much as we needed to. for me. And I think, you know, in terms of the character and things like that, again, it was really about the pitting of Muse versus Captain Phillips, and that obviously happened in the Lifeboat. Mm-hmm. But up until that point, you know, everyone's saying, you know, it's the edge of your seat movie, and it is, because that's how it starts off. And that's from that moment, you know, as soon as he leaves his wife, you're on the edge of your seat of like, when are they going to take over the ship and things like that. And so you're kind of expecting that. So that's why I don't mind that it happens that later, because they just throw that expectation in, and it's a great device to start with early on, rather than do what most movies would normally do, is character development.
Okay, so here's my question for you. I have two things. First, Phil, you mentioned that you were on your edge of the seat the moment he took off, basically from the boat dock. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's the moment he said from the moment he said goodbye to his wife.
Moment he said goodbye to his wife. I did not have that experience. I wasn't on the edge of my seat until they probably got into, I would say, the cargo hold.
Okay.
Or so that's really when I started getting very involved, is when they got into the cargo hold, when we saw the other engineer go out and turn off the master power. That's when I was really getting amped up. That's when I started feeling the suspense filling the build. There are certain little moments that I'm sure I'll point out later. But what about you guys? Did you guys have any key turning points where emotionally you felt you were affected?
You know, what I found so fascinating was, so they did this great juxtaposition. You get to see their daily world. So you get to see their worlds in them, and the mundane things. They're getting ready to go on, but going on a trip, driving to, and they're talking about stuff that you would just talk about. It doesn't seem like anything interesting. It's just the same thing, that this is our life. This is what we do.
Right.
And you cut to the other world where the look of it, the sound of it, everything is so different. You get to see where these, and you know, time and space is going to bring these two groups together. Right. And for me, I was fascinated. I wasn't on the edge of my seat about that, but I loved how they were showing you what went into these two captains facing off.
Sure.
And since I knew that that's where we were getting to, I wasn't on my edge of the seat until they started actually getting to the boat and the ladder. And then it was like, ah. So for me, that's when that suspense and that thrill stuff and all that excitement and the energy kicked in. But until then, I was loving seeing this world and this world, and knowing that those two worlds are going to collide.
Mm. Yeah.
See, I got more engaged when we first saw the Somali pirates starting to band together, and they're picking out the crew members, and when everyone's getting into the boat, because we see they're yelling at each other. They're loud. There's a chaotic kind of environment going on. It's engaging into the audience. It really pulls you in. And so when I saw them getting into the boats and revving up their engines and going after this one ship that they decided to go after, I was like, that's when I got more involved. I was like, they're coming. That built the anticipation for me.
Yeah. See, I mean, for me, like, I knew they were coming. Mm-hmm. I knew that was going to happen. And everything that you said, John, I agree. And I liked that juxtapositioning. For me, I guess the movie sort of kind of kicked in when there was the first confrontation, when they took over the bridge. Mm-hmm. For me, it was, that's when Tom Hanks, like, his performance up until that point was okay. It was fine. Mm-hmm. But once you saw, like, the gears behind his eyes, like, going, okay, how do I stall? What am I going to do? Okay, I'm going to offer them every amenity that I can. Mm-hmm. And which, you know, oh, you want to look at the ship? Well, we got to start up from over here. Well, but we have to go to this room. Oh, and then in the galley, and he's offering them breakfast. And I liked all that stuff. And that's when things started getting ramping up for me anyways. You know, I knew that he was going to eventually get into the lifeboat. And I think it was because, with trailers and marketing and whatnot, there wasn't too much going on or said as to what happens in the lifeboat.
Right.
It was more about the hijacking of the ship.
Sure.
So for me, it was more interesting once they got into the lifeboat, because that was, well, I was in uncharted water, so to speak.
How many references are we going to make? Nice.
You know, I didn't exactly know what was going on in there, and that's what led to suspense. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that Captain Phillips, we all knew that Captain Phillips was going to make it, but it was just as to how. And then the last 10 minutes of that movie are amazingly emotional. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that, to me, you know, Tom Hanks, that's where his performance
kicked in.
For me, the
whole, it's a slow build. It's a slow build until we get to the, and then it's just the nice, fun, I mean, exciting thing. And then you hit this emotional outpouring.
Yeah.
And you just, so that's why it's very
sad. Yeah, you get hit. And when you're done, I was just like, oh, okay. Oh, now, because I think up to, you know, I had that same thing too with my, I had high expectations. Mm-hmm. Those expectations weren't met literally for me until like literally awake. But those last 15 minutes mm-hmm. were so tense that when it was done, you're like, wow, okay, now I can, that's where I was really grabbed emotionally for that kind of a drama. And it worked as an action movie and Zero Dark Thirty
So let me ask, because you just posed this. Who else did, Phil, did you have high expectations or did you go in?
I actually didn't have high expectations at all. But going back to the kind of, you know, we're talking about Tom and we're talking about Somalians, you know, so part of, as soon as Tom signed on back in 2011, the biggest challenge for them was, obviously, okay, how are we going to cast these guys, you know, the Somalians?
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a casting call, and I think around 700, I don't know the exact number, but 700 participants Cedar Riverside, Minneapolis participated to find, you know, those four guys. Because if you don't find those four, you know, as you guys said, different personalities, it would have never really worked.
And a lot of people have asked why there, because, and it just so happens there's a large contingency. Of Somalis there.
It's more than 14,000 Somalis live in Minneapolis. It is one of the largest, if not the largest, Somali population.
And a lot of them are refugees
from
this country because a lot of them were quote, adopted or in some way sheltered.
I thought that was interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, regarding. Bacard. I'm not sure if I'm. Do you know how to pronounce his name, Phil? Is it
which
Bacard Abdi?
Yeah.
I don't know how. We don't know how to pronounce.
I don't want to. I don't want to disrespect the gentleman. But
apologize.
I apologize.
No,
ahead of time.
Our apologies, not you personally. So, but our apologies.
Well, me too. Well, apparently, at the age of 7, they moved from Somalia to Yemen, and that's where basically he learned Arabic from playing soccer. Mm-hmm. And then at 14, his family moved to Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. At 14, and he learned English. Catch this from listening to Jay-Z and watching Seinfeld episodes.
There we go.
So no soup for you.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's, you know, so that's, I think that's a great little piece. And you're right. So there were 700 people, who showed up to this thing and he even admits that he was an hour late.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I feel like we're starting to talk about the actors and so much of this movie has been focused on Tom Hanks. This is Tom Hanks's movie. This is, everyone's like, he's going to get an Oscar for this. I love Tom Hanks in the movie. I will put that out there. I thought he was great. I thought he really did hit his stride in that those last 10 minutes or so. I felt that was really powerful. For me, what carried the movie through acting-wise was actually the pirates. Musée was incredible. I was so absorbed with him the entire time that I wish people had been almost yelling out his name, saying his name. This is like his movie because he did such a good job, and so did some of the other.
And I'm going to be on this side. I was not. In the beginning, I was going, this could be a long movie because I didn't find him engaging in the beginning. He was kind of a blank slate, and wasn't on the screen for me.
Right,
and then as it started to pick up and I got to see him more, I was like, oh, wait a minute here. Okay, we got something going on here. So for me, it was not right off the bat. It took a while for him. And then when they hit their stride all together, because I loved them in The Lifeboat when they were at each other.
Yeah.
Then it really was working for me. But in the beginning, it was not
working. Well, you know, to that point, I think, you know, they obviously they filmed separately, right? So the first time that Tom Hanks and I'm going to call him Muse, character name.
Muse, okay.
The first time Irish
and Muse
I met was when,
when they break into the bridge.
Yeah, and so, you know what I mean? I think.
Congratulations, Paul Greengrass. It was his idea.
Yep.
It was his idea. And I think that's smart. By bringing them together, you know, again, having, whenever you act against someone like Tom Hanks, you know, you want to rise to the occasion and things like that. And so, because most of their scenes thereafter were together, they really could play off each other and really rise to that occasion. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, you know, as you're pointing out, John, that early on, because he wasn't with Tom Hanks, maybe he didn't have a level that he needed to aspire to arise to, you know.
That was my feeling. I don't fault him or anything like that. The sparks were flying better when they were either on the lifeboat or all together when things were happening. But in the beginning, it just took a while. That's all.
And for me, I disagree. I thought that it was very obvious. Not obvious, but like when they were picking the soldiers who were going to go on and B, these hijackers, the people stood out in good ways to me. Mm-hmm. The fact that one was in the back and seemed really aggressive and solemn, and I felt that they all were very much active and felt like full people who had these real lives and who had these missions they had to go on. And I felt like they knew their circumstances and were just like enthralled in the adventure. I really enjoyed it.
I completely agree with you. I was engaged with the Somali pirates because we see more so four different guys and we only see Tom Hanks as one character. So we see more personality within those four people. And I thought Muse was more engaging. I didn't have a hard time connecting to him because we saw near the beginning he has beef with the other Somali captain pirate and and everyone's calling him skinny. Everyone's kind of like jabbing at him, and that just shows he had more drive, more passion, more heart to do and to hijack this ship that everyone had doubt that he could. So I thought he had a better motivation to do this, and he was more engaging in that way as a character for myself.
No, I agree with you on that. I don't have any qualms with how they portrayed it. I'm not saying that it was clear his motivations. All that stuff is absolutely true, and I don't debate that at all. For me, anyway, all I'm saying was in the beginning for me, his acting wasn't as good as it was towards the end. You're saying the same thing about Tom, so.
Yeah. No, saying, I mean, we're saying this. Yeah, I agree with you. But it just, I think that how they set up the Somalis is there was almost like a case system.
Yeah.
You know, and it was.
Well, they did this, but this is what I'm talking about in terms of the script, which I thought was great. They showed the caste system that the Somalis have, and you know, you're a worker, he's a boss.
Yeah.
Well, they had the union guys in the cab. I thought that was great because without saying a word, you got to see these worlds are the same in some respects.
Sure.
That's exactly what the same thing is going on here. The union, we all have bosses. Even Tom says that line.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they were clearly trying to show you that we're not that different. Mm-hmm. They're just desperate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he says it at the end. He goes, maybe in America, maybe, but not where I'm from.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Also, real, you know, before we fully dive into more of the story, does anyone know Kevin Spacey's full involvement as an executive producer?
I just saw his name as executive producer. That's the first time I saw of it.
I mean, I think that's brilliant. And then Scott Rudin, who's done Social Network. Yeah. I mean, he's done a lot of the David Fincher movies.
Producer.
Great producer. Yeah. You know, he obviously kind of helped with this movie.
Yeah. A lot of people want to work with him, dying to work with him, because he always he picks great projects, and they come in very well made.
Yeah. Yeah, no, very well made. Look, the way this movie looked and everything, and again, I think that has to do with the cinematography. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Paul Greengrass, basically, between his cinematographer and editor, he works with, you know, he's been working with the same people a couple of times. So, you know, all of his films, even the Bourne movies, have a sense of, I don't know, realism. Like there's a documentary sort of kind of feel to those movies. And this one for sure has the same, you know, you're in that lifeboat. Like not once did I find that the lifeboat was a set. I could have seen like the bridge and the big boat, probably maybe a set, but in the lifeboat, I felt as claustrophobic as everybody else.
And I'm curious because let's get back to that, but let's talk more specifically about how, if that's one of the reasons why he chose this story, because it's true, do you think that lends to his style of shooting? I mean, obviously he's done Bourne and everything like that, but do you think that has anything to do with it because he can go handheld and it kind of adds to that?
Yeah, and he was a documentarian before he started. So, yeah, I think so. He can lend those talents. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, with his team, you had Barry Ackroyd, who did the cinematography, who also worked on Hurt Locker.
Right.
So we know how real that movie looked, and he worked on United 93. He's a good, he's a good DP, but he has a realism to him. And, you know, it was edited by Christopher Rouse, who also worked on United 93. I'm just saying, like, it's because of these people that he worked with and, you know, this real story. He, you know, it comes off as looking, it doesn't look like a flashy action picture. It really brings you in.
Does.
Absolutely.
But now more about, I want to wrap up the story part of this in the script. Because one of the things, I keep going back to how they, without giving you any expos, they showed you these two worlds. And without referring to, because the caste system that's on the beach when they're trying to figure out who's, and it really did feel like Home Depot when you're, you know, who needs a job and they're all, you know, and they're picking people.
Yeah.
I mean, Yeah. I just thought that was amazing too, because I've never been to Somalia, so I don't know what it's like. I don't know how accurate that is, but however they portrayed it, I thought it was effective for the movie.
Yep.
And then you saw them getting in these tiny little boats with these horrible little outboards against this huge cargo liner.
Yeah.
And just the whole thing, it seemed like the excess of one world and the desperation of another. And it was almost like a David and Goliath thing going at each other. Four guys, granted they had guns, in a tiny little boat up against this huge thing. And just the way they showed the cargo and containers when they're being loaded, mm-hmm. and juxtaposing that with those guys getting on their boats and putting their provisions on, I was just, I was going, they're really smart how they're painting this. I mean, for me, anyway, I thought it was great storytelling.
And I agree, because, I'll go back to, I think the way that we are conditioned to watch action movies, you would never believe that. Mm. If this were not a true story, you wouldn't buy it for a second.
Yeah. And even
the right? Exactly. You wouldn't buy it for a second that this could actually happen.
Because they showed that the huge cargo ship is so massive, they showed the little guys. It shows that just the unlikeliness of this happen. And the fact that they actually showed that this is real, did happen, which just makes it all the more interesting.
I agree.
I even like the way they the way Tom Hanks handled his little uprising about the guy saying, hey, listen, I didn't sign on for this. I'm a union guy, all this.
Yeah.
And he puts him down in terms of assault and insulting them, but just puts quells that little fire going on there. That, and then the way they did it on the pirate boat.
It was a wrench to the head.
Exactly. It was like, oh my, I mean, I just loved that part of that storytelling.
There was just constant parallels. And there was even with using, but what I liked is it wasn't complete violence on this Somali side. The fact that he was making them weld together the ladder, because he'd already seen what they were up against.
Yeah.
The fact that he put two motors on the back of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Those adjustments you see happening on both sides as well.
And you could see those two captains thinking.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, he's thinking about how to do it. You could see that mental game happening.
Yeah.
No games going on constantly.
Yeah, no games. And and that's what I loved about, like, because he was thinking, yet acting so naturally about that. And those things about the movie for me make the movie, and they bring that realism that we're not, again, when we see an action movie, we're not conditioned that way.
Right.
And this way, it shows it in such a real aspect that you go, okay, of course I could see how this would happen.
With the script, I thought, the first time that they were going after them, I thought that's when they would board. And the fact that they didn't.
Everybody did.
I thought on a script level, that was great, because, you're just drawing it out. And now you have, again, these little battles.
And you get a little respite. You're all charged up, ready for the big thing, and it doesn't happen.
And I have to throw in there, I think, too, outside of the script, because I didn't get to read the script prior. Mm-hmm. But we're conditioned to an extent because that's the way the trailer played.
Yeah, sure.
And so we didn't, because when that happened, it's like, oh, I thought they were taking over the ship now. Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. It was a nice little twist.
Just what Sarah was saying. It was so cool that the next time you see them, they're already hauling ass.
Oh, yeah.
They got two outboards.
Oh, yeah.
And you go, oh, these guys are serious.
Yep. They're back.
And while you're seeing that, you're hearing Captain Phillips say, we're going about the same thing. We've done this before. It'll work again.
Yeah, exactly. New,
but you know that everyone is
making adjustments. They adapted very well, very quickly. Now, let's talk. You had mentioned earlier, Dimitri, that it's kind of like different movies or two different movies in terms of its kind of. But
I thought so.
It almost, for me, it had four acts in it in a sense. And there's all the setup. You're seeing the two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was kind of like the hijack happening.
Right.
Then it was the lifeboat. And then, of course, the resolution at the end with this being saved. So that last little resolution there is the whole emotional release that we go through. Did that bother? Because that's not really traditional in terms of these kinds of movies. Did you guys like that? What did you feel about that?
Personally, I would categorize that I would throw that under like pacing to an extent. Mm-hmm. And for me, the movie was well paced for a movie that clocks in at approximately 2 hours, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the time you get to the end, you're like, well, okay, I didn't look at my watch all that much. No, the short answer to your question is it didn't bother me at all. I actually enjoyed that it became, I like, some movies will keep that same level. You know, you'll have ups and downs, but at the end, this movie didn't have that. You know, we had the hijacking. And again, like I say, for me, once it got into the lifeboat, it became a different movie. And that I appreciated it for. And I liked how you know, how the military then came in, and there was some great juxtapositioning about the might of the military compared to.
Just
seen
that little those three ships.
Holy cow!
The first time the battleship comes across.
Oh my god, that was I jumped when that horn went off. but that's what I'm like thinking.
Talk about a pucker factor.
I love that saying. When that happens, at that point, like, you know, if I were a pirate, okay, I give up. I'm done. See you later.
That's what I loved about it, because they showed where they came from.
Yeah.
When Muse says, "I can't go back," you get it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's how desperate he is. I've come too far. I can't go back. He knows he's not going
to
win.
But I did have one thing, and Phil, I'm going to throw it to the group, but my one thing is, there's a line in the movie where it says something to the effect of, "This is blowing up all over the place." Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have minded to see how it was blowing up all over the place.
You mean go to America?
In one way, because like this was a huge event, right? And so you know that in the United States, we were treating it differently than how those people were treating it in Somalia.
So that would have been interesting for you guys. Would you guys like that part of the?
I would have.
Sarah's like very. Yeah. He has a lot of consternation about this.
I mean, maybe I'll.
I just would have liked to have seen how did it blow. Like, how did it affect his wife?
Okay,
like we never saw her again.
See, like, I completely disagree.
Okay,
maybe that's because I do personally remember this happening.
You wanted to stay.
I know how I reacted to it when it was going on, so I was fine knowing what was happening in the country. And for me, I liked how we constantly followed Musse and Captain Phillips, but then we had our other parties kind of change throughout the acts, as you said. So we got the families in the beginning.
Sure.
Then we got the crew.
Right.
Then the crew was replaced by the military, and then the military kind of lasted throughout the whole movie. So I liked that as we kind of lost certain characters, we got this new set.
Yeah,
if we had brought back the wife's reaction then, it would have taken me more out of it. I liked that each new set of, like, people we were getting or who was getting involved heightened it intensified. And I think that we were so emotional, or I was so emotionally connected by the end to Hanks, that I could feel his love for his wife through his letters, through everything he was struggling for, that I didn't need to see her, because we all know that we all know she's going crazy and worried and doesn't know what's going on. So for me, I didn't need to see any of that.
And for you guys, that might have heightened things for you a little bit.
I think because in America, we have more media than what the Somali has, and we know that the president even got involved with this. Right. Obama got involved, and he gave the command to use armed forces against them. So I think had we saw the American media coverage of it, it would have added more, but it also would have taken away from the whole storyline on the ship and the emotional connection that we've already established. Yeah. But as a viewer and conditioned to the American culture, we would expect media coverage, but it wasn't needed.
I want to ask you about this, but I think one of the reasons why they probably chose that, this is where I want your opinion on, Phil, is obviously, I think Sarah kind of hit on that a little bit, is that we already know that story. The one story we don't know is what it was like to be on the lifeboat.
Right.
Like that. So that's probably why, for time reasons as well, it's like we had enough tension like crazy here. We already know how they feel about each other. Let's tell the story they don't know. What do you think, Phil?
I agree with 100%, and so I'm going to just add to that in a different way. I think here's the thing, right? All stories, they kind of start out small, and then, you know, you kind of expand the problems. What may have been a one-on-one confrontation with someone expands into the world and the world, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we got that, but we were in each kind of level, we were able to focus that idea onto someone, right? So then we got later on the end being the negotiator, right? We were able to focus on him. We have the Navy captain and things like that. So as this problem got more notoriety in the world, we felt that, but we didn't need to go outside the coverage. And I feel like also so many genre movies of, like, action movies would do that.
Yeah.
And I'm just tired of it. You know, and I like that, defying that convention.
I think they covered it a little bit when there was
the captain of the battleship was talking to somebody over the radio, and she's saying, look, I can't remember her name or the character, and she's saying, look, this is getting big.
That's the one that said this is blowing up.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think they covered it enough that I think that's what they were attempting to do anyway, because they wanted to nod to it, that this is getting bigger than
And the last part, about the wife, I mean, you show her crying, like, great. You know what I mean? It's not necessary.
But you know what, though?
It's very effective. In memory of Apollo 13, they were showing how people on Earth were responding. So it's not like it's not effective. It is effective because you see you adds a human quality to it. But I agree. I don't know that it was necessary.
But to Sarah's point, I mean, the fact that you understand, you know what she's going through because you know what Captain Phillips is going through with writing the letters and all that. So, you know, conversely, I don't know. Apollo 13, different movie, different choices.
Clearly.
But yeah, clearly. I'm just saying, again. You know, I wouldn't have minded just a little throwback to the wife because, you know, she brought us into this. She introduced us to Captain Phillips in the movie, drives him to the airport, and they had that great conversation in the car, which I thought, again, it was, you know, it was about their kids. It's about the world's changing, and I love that conversation. So personally, and again, I'll even go a little bit farther back, The Right Stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we're talking two astronaut movies but... You know, again, a lot of the drama comes from the wives who have to deal with what's going on. And her husband, you know, Captain Phillips is in a world of shit.
I don't know. It's just like I really loved that the most emotion drama we're getting from Captain Phillips and from Pirates and that the fact that the military was so professional job and this was just a pressure. And the fact that the emotion was contained in the story we haven't heard.
I agree because and what I appreciated, it is different than most because most times you would do the cutbacks, you would see how
I'm going to put the nail on the coffin.
Go ahead.
You're talking about two.
I wasn't done, but
I'm going to put the nail on the coffin. Ready?
You go right ahead.
No, because talking about sci-fi and being lost in space, and you know you could throw gravity in that whatever. With that, it's man versus nature. Here, it's man versus man, and so you want to focus on that, and you know what I mean? And just that distinction alone changes the whole effect and how you have to tell it.
But it's still drama. I mean, drama is drama no matter, but again, I don't want to make a big point of it. Yeah. It's for me, I wouldn't have minded. I didn't mind the movie the way that it played out. But if you're throwing the line out there, hey, it's blowing up all over the place, I would have liked to have sort of seen... Again, how it was blowing up, because personally, I don't remember exactly.
Right, so it might have given you some context.
So that's all.
Personally, I like the choice not to, just because normally they would do it. So I thought this was a different kind of movie, and it was effective for me, so I didn't need it. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. So.
Debate over.
I think.
So there's your coffin.
There's the coffin.
But one thing I want to talk to you a little bit, because we've talked about the conversation that they had in the car, meaning Captain Phillips and his wife, and I don't remember her name.
Something with an A.
Audrey, I think. Audra.
Andrea.
Andrea. Yeah.
Okay,
Andrea.
So one of the lines that they kept using was, it's going to be okay, right? It's going to be all right?
It's going to be all right. Okay.
And they just kept that thing. They kept touching on that throughout the movie, and it took on a much different meaning in the middle of the movie when, of course, Muse kept saying it, and then, of course, it was a totally different feeling when the corpsman says it at the end when she's tending to his wounds.
It's going to be okay. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Wasn't that great?
I think that was a nice tie-in, because at the beginning we get it, and the Captain Phillips himself, even in real life, said that happened when he was talking to his wife before he went onto the ship. Mm-hmm. And then, like, that was... just a nice tie-in throughout the whole movie to always reinsure the audience that everything does turn out okay.
Yeah, and you know what's really awesome?
Even though there's chaos and you don't think it's
for
going
everyone
to,
who used the
it
line.
Does turn out
Bob
okay.
Yeah. used it.
Yeah, and well, he's alive.
In prison, that's right.
You know, what's great, too, I think, about that scene is that woman, she's an actual... Navy nurse.
Oh yeah, that was great.
That. Yeah, she was just told, do what you would normally do. So I'm not even entirely sure that the "it's going to be okay" was scripted for her to say. She may have been treating her, saying, you know, and there was a perfect tie-in. And
Heard how the first one went, right? The first take?
Yeah.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Tell
us.
The first time she's on set with Tom, she sees him and they're supposed to be doing this scene, and, you know, and she can't because she's just so flabbergasted and flummoxed.
She's in shock.
She's in shock. She's kind of crying herself, and, you know, he has to calm her down and stuff.
Because she's starstruck.
Starstruck, yeah, of course. You know, one of the world's great actors, you know, and she's a Corman, a real Corman.
Yeah, a real Corman.
So, but I thought she, you know, after whatever, I don't know what they did to calm her down, but I thought she handled herself
very well. It was
great. And, you know, it felt like she was a Corman doing her job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it felt, I don't know, like I said, it was that part of the movie, too.
Yeah.
Where emotionally you were really impacted. I was really impacted. Like at that scene with her, when it was an amazingly filmed scene. I'm glad that they shot it, because apparently that's not how it originally ended. Mm-hmm. But they said, well, we have this scene, and Tom Hanks apparently improvised the entire scene.
Wow.
So
nicely done.
Excellently. Yeah. Yeah, it was perfect. Wow. Great.
The beauty of being speechless.
Right? Yeah, it was great.
Oh, my God. Great. So, I mean, I at that point, I was noticing, of course, it was affecting me emotionally as well. And I looked around, and everybody was just, you know, drying their eyes.
Yeah.
Everything. I was just amazed at how well that was done. Now, the last thing I want to talk about in terms of script and story, the whole thing about put this on. Wear this. Get in your same seat. Put this on. Wear this shirt. Mm-hmm. How many times were they going to hit that? Did that bother anybody beyond me?
No, I think that added to it, because it allowed the audience to be like, okay, this is the spot that they're not going to target.
Yeah, but that's my point, is they hit that so many damn times. It's like, really? They're not that stupid.
Well, you know, it's funny that you said that. It's funny that you said that, because I was thinking, geez, these pirates here, they come off as being ruthless, but not so smart in certain scenes. But, you know, I mean, because I thought it was a great scene when Tom Hanks said, have you been in touch with my wife? Mm-hmm. All right, tell her I'm in seat 15C. Yeah, and I'm like, why are they not picking up on anything?
Well, but here's the thing. Obviously, I don't know how many times they've actually done, stolen a ship or abducted it in any way. So I don't know how much experience they have as pilots.
Here's what in terms of that, for me, what was great, they had that, you know, the three of them are looking at each other once Moose is gone, and they're like, you know, one of them says, hey, do you guys not realize what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And so I think from the start, they had expectations, they had dreams, they had ideas, but they were all confused in the outcome and things like that, and they were illusioned about what may happen versus, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, they should have given up, but they chose not to. And
and I think they were all going, what are we going to do? Give up and go to jail, or hopefully just wait it out longer and see what can happen. If we get to the Somali coast, we might survive. I mean, for me, I'm just talking as an audience member. It just drove me crazy, because I went, okay, I get it. Stop.
But here, for me, what was great, towards the end, I think you could look at it that way, or you could look at it like, for me, one of the great lines by the negotiator was, every time, you know, they said, two red, one green. It was like, I need three green before we can execute. And it's like, okay, well, I need you to have this shirt on. What are you going to do? You know, and how long is it going to take you to put on that shirt?
They never used it. I just don't think you should set something up like that if you're not going to use it. And they never said, shit,
he wasn't even sitting in the seat.
Down. or just on the shirt.
The target's moving. That was their target, not his.
They never said, oh, he's up, he's out. Well, hold it. Because what I would have preferred is, if you're going to make it important that he's in the seat, when he finally gets out and has that fight, I wanted them to be just about to shoot red and have green, 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 and he comes out of his seat and they go, down, stand. Something to add to the tension.
But that, I agree on a certain level, because the seat 15 did start to bother me. But then I just thought it was almost ironic that it took him getting out of the rules to actually get out of the situation.
He didn't do it. It was, what's his name, pulling the thing.
No, but he did, because he was told to sit in the seat with his shirt on so they would know where he was, so they could figure out how to shoot everybody.
Right.
But he only got them into the plane.
No, that's not what got him, because the guy in the boat.
It got two of them.
But they already had one. They had two on many occasions. They had two, not three.
Yeah.
They had two, not three. But the other thing was the shirt. What was the shirt all about? They didn't pay that off, because I think in real life, the shirt has some sort of reflectance. So when you look at it through infrared or whatever, you know who that guy is, and you know not to aim there. But they never used that.
No.
And I was like, why set that up if you're not? Because that would have been cool. Set that up. Yeah. But he's got this reflective shirt, whatever it is, that reads differently in infrared or night vision. Why set it up if you're not going to use it?
Yeah, and they did, you know, here's your uniform. Make sure you put it on.
Like, come on.
And again, I would have been like, you're not putting that on. Like, it was just really weird how that all played out.
That to me just, that was the only misstep in terms of the script.
John, you should have led with that first line.
Why?
No, because that's a much better argument for it than a nitpick, you know? I think that's a much more concrete.
Maybe you should have been in, you know, been paying more attention.
But no. Next time, the fact that they, you know, it reads better. I think that is an interesting point. You saying that's, it sucks that they didn't use it, but I like that you made that reference rather than that.
I actually think they did use it because there was one or two quick moments where we saw Captain Phillips in the shirt and was like, oh, okay, I know where he is.
I never saw that he was different.
He was wearing a yellow shirt, it didn't look
different. You saw it in the window when they were fighting. You saw the back of his shirt. I believe it says Navy on it. But I saw the visual representation from their point of view.
There's much more to fight about.
But what I'm saying is not from their point of view with night vision or with infrared. You didn't see that.
Yeah, no, I yeah. But it's, again, I mean, yeah, I agree. It's, you know, it's one of those minor details, like, why wasn't he sitting in that seat? You know, there's a lot of stuff if you wanted to, but if you're going to bring it up in a movie.
We're dissecting.
But if you're going to bring it up in a movie, you're right.
Yeah.
Pay it off.
Exactly. Pay it off. That's all I'm saying. It would have been an easy thing to pay off.
My nitpick or question is earlier in the movie, we're going to go backwards.
Okay.
When they're on the ship still.
Sure.
And he's left. Captain Phillips is told to leave his walkie-talkie on the bridge.
Yeah.
There's a message that goes through about placing the glass in front of his feet, and it doesn't get put through that walkie-talkie. Wouldn't all of the walkie-talkies on that line heard it?
No, because you have different channels.
The guy said I'm on channel 2.
Yeah.
I think they were on the same channel.
I don't know.
Who knows?
It could be. Could be.
Who knows?
I thought they could
and
be that one.
We can, truth or fact...
Yeah.
Fact or fiction?
Yeah.
Oh, the glass and bananas. Yes. And who knows?
Yeah, and then we also see Captain Phillips. He suddenly says out loud, you know, you should get shoes and whatnot. Mm. And because he knows that his crew member was hiding, and he says it out loud so he can tell his other crew members. Yeah. And
Didn't use the walkie.
Being a
that.
Captain, he would know that they should change their channels.
Absolutely.
To get that message across.
One guy did say, we're on channel 2, we're on channel 2.
That's the way, too, that I like, because Captain Phillips, again, or Tom Hanks as Captain Phillips, was saying he knew his guy was there. Mm-hmm. And he's like, why don't you get some shoes on this guy? He's walking around bare. And he was saying it loud enough. And the guy's like, barefoot. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And have a
die
muffin.
Hard. Shoot the glass.
Shoot the glass. Glass.
Die hard. All right, so let's move on. We got to get to a bunch of other things. Let's talk about directing. Paul Greengrass.
Directing information.
You guys jump in.
I think it's probably his most accomplished. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the heart or the courage to see United 93. Mm-hmm. So I'll say that right there. I saw his Bourne movies, and while I think he's good at action, I am not a fan of the shaky cam. Mm-hmm. Not a fan of it at all. It blurs the action too much for me. I like to see what's going on, but in this movie, I feel that it really worked. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it really did lend tension and drama and this documentary type of feel to the movie. So yeah, I thought this was his best film directorially for me.
Anything from you, sir?
I mean, shaky cam normally doesn't bother me too much. So I felt like it fit the atmosphere. I felt like each direction they kind of took with, different groups fit that setting. So the camera style for being on the ship, being in the lifeboats, the rockiness, the shakiness, feeling cramped, feeling claustrophobic, getting in those tight little spaces that I can't even imagine how they got cameras in there, was great, opposed to the big overhead shots that you got of the Navy SEALs and the military and the spotlights, all of that, this grandeur. I liked that difference in that portrayal and the fact that sometimes you did feel so small and sometimes so big. That awareness was great to me.
I didn't mind the shaky cam because it added to that voyeuristic feeling. Because I think it portrayed the life that was in the little lifeboat in a completely different way, because most people don't know what actually happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think having the shaky cam just made it all the more real that this did happen, yeah, and it reinforced that. And I didn't mind it. I thought it was very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let me be clear. I didn't necessarily mind it in this movie, mm-hmm, but I think it gets used too much in action movies. And sometimes in an action movie, when you're having a big set piece, I want to see the set piece. Don't hide it from me by shaking the camera all over the place just to heighten action.
Well, to be fair, Hunger Games is a... To be fair, especially in action movies now, because they use so much green screen, that the best way to cover that up is to be as fast as possible, so that way you don't have to render as much of the details. Yeah. So,
Thank you, Phil.
Phil,
in terms of directing, what did you have to say about, regardless of the shaky cam? What are we
I'll answer that. You know, this is cinematography / directing for me. Exactly. I am a huge fan of his. I love the Ultimatum movies and things like that. I think in a world where so much shaky cam is being used, and more so, where you have movies like Chronicle, where it literally is just handheld footage of me just walking around or whatever, we're getting more used to that, and I thought in comparison to that, this wasn't shaky at all. And also, you know, every time we're not with the Somalians, everything is a little bit calmer. You know, it wasn't until the Somalians entered the world of Captain Phillips that things really did get shaken, you know, which obviously was a choice. So I thought that was really interesting. And, you know, does Paul have – he's not one of those directors like a Spike Lee or Quentin Tarantino where you absolutely know this is his movie. Mm-hmm. But I don't mind that because it is a obviously very well done movie. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the beauty is in that, you know, you can't really tell. It's not, you can't tell that there's an artifice behind it.
And also to go back to the production aspect, it was mostly a lot of motion, but even when they were filming it, they were having problems. They used what they called a gimbal, which is like a hydraulic, but even they said the focus puller and the director, the DOP, were feeling motion sickness, and they actually threw up on Tom Hanks during the filming. So it was a rough ride for them too.
Didn't like that take, huh?
Yeah. It was rough for them too. So if we think it was bad, they had the more worse.
I'm going to jump here about the director and the cinematography with the shake cam. I'm not a big fan of it, nor am I a proponent of it. I mean, do I hate it? I thought it was overdone in this one a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. And I thought it was weird that we would go from the lifeboat, which you understood the shaky cam, and then you go to the big battleship, and they're still having the shaky cam. And that just, it's like, what are you doing? That makes no sense to me. Yeah. Big, huge battleship like that. I get it on the lifeboat because it makes sense. But then you go to this, and you still have the shaky cam. And I just thought it was a horrible choice. For me, it was. But I didn't – overall, I didn't mind it. I would have said you could tone it down. I'd still be happy because it just goes on forever. And it's, to me, it looks ubiquitous, and it looks like everybody's doing that now. And where I thought this movie was different on a lot of fronts and was risky on a lot of fronts by showing things that we wouldn't normally see in this kind of a movie, I thought it was kind of an easy choice, and I would have tried – I would have said – I would do something else because everybody does this.
Yeah. Well, I do have a great quote again from Paul Greengrass when he says, had Barry Aykroyd, the cinematographer, had he not gone to Pilates classes, I wouldn't have gotten the shots that I got. Yeah. And you can tell, especially in the lifeboat. It's like, how are they positioning the camera?
That part I thought was wonderful. That was great. How they got those, I don't know.
How they got some of
those. Glad they did.
And they looked fantastic.
Absolutely.
Again, like I said, it for whatever reason, in this movie, it didn't bother me as much. I'm not a fan of it in the action movies, but I think we've said that this is not your typical action movie.
Well, for me, it bothered me only when we were getting on the battleship, because everything else on the battleship was so clean, crisp. Mm-hmm. You know, it was by the numbers, and it was like so. It was a great attention to detail, and regimented, and then we got this, and I'm going, it just didn't seem to work. It seemed like
here's the thing, right? I think they did their because it's not unlike an episode of Whale Wars in terms of how when there's action, you get a certain style. When it's calm, you get another certain style of shooting.
I'm not saying should have gone calm. You can still have that with quick cuts and interesting shots and movement and all this other stuff. You can still have all that fun action. I just didn't think it didn't jive to me. That's all I'm saying. You can't do it. But, and let's talk more about the directing, because I thought on balance, I thought Paul Greengrass did a great job of getting his actors prepared. I thought he did a great job. So he did a great casting job, and he certainly got them where they needed to be emotionally. And I mean, it was so effective, because if you're working to that end, that emotional summit, I thought he did a great job on all fronts in that regard. So
regardless of shaky cam or not, let's talk about that part of the directing, the fact that he got his actors ready. He certainly got his script put together. And we'll talk about the writing.
Let me ask you this, because once they get the bulk of emotion happens in the boat, right? More or less. And by being able to shoot in one location, you can also kind of tell it linearly. You know what I mean? Whereas if you had to shoot from location to location, you might have to shoot things out of order just because of convenience or whatever. Do you think that helped?
It certainly cut down on costs.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I think it helped because, Sarah, let's speak to this. You're an actress. You're in the same confined space.
With the same people. With the same people.
Exactly.
So much easier.
All sweaty guys.
Oh, my gosh. And you're with everyone because this person's kidding. In a corner.
So how hard is that to get into character? You don't have to fake anything.
Yeah, this isn't like knocking down the performance.
No, not at all.
That's so exciting for the actor to be crammed and to be surrounded by the people you are in this hostile situation with.
Yeah.
That's like this. Because
I think you get, that's like turning coal into diamonds. I mean, that's all that pressure.
It's fantastic.
So I think
it is true, being in the same location, being in that one spot. Mm-hmm. But it's emotional.
And also, if you think about the atmosphere that they were in, they're in a little 28 fiberglass lifeboat.
Right.
And they said when they were doing the research that the lifeboat got up to 117 degrees in there. You're stuck in one confined small space for 5 days straight. And even the Somali pirates, they ran out of their cot leaves, the stimulant that they were chewing on. And I kind of that was like the equivalent of a cigarette or something, like running out and not having that stimulant.
Withdrawal.
And it showed within the pirates as well that they're unwavering and everyone's just getting
everything
was
starting to unravel.
I think just being in
nothing tying you to normalcy.
Exactly. Yeah. Just being in that atmosphere added to how the character were portrayed, how they acted.
And I was going to say, I loved how Captain Phillips was seeing how it was unraveling and taking advantage. You could see all that happening in his eyes. And he's like,
There was a great line that took place. It was probably, I think it was the last scene maybe that took place on the big boat. When the lifeboat, they see it going off and it's like, they're heading towards the Somali coast. At their speed, it's going to take them 36 hours.
Yeah,
it's like, 36 hours.
In that,
oh my head.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and that set the stage.
Don't you think that because we were so in that boat for so long in those quarters and stuff, so that, I know, he jumped off and all this, but he ended up back in there and stuff like that. And because we were in that confined space as an audience for so long, that when we finally got off and followed him onto the big ship, that sense of relief, we really were with him on
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Oh, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually, you sort of kind of feel it when they broke that first window, too.
Oh, yeah.
When that window broke I just went, it feels, the sea breeze.
For sure.
We need a Febreze plug-in over here.
I don't think it didn't work for me in my theaters. It was freezing cold. So we didn't, I didn't get
I think you're watching your movies in the wrong place.
Was it loud?
Was it loud this time? But freezing. These guys are sweating like crazy. I'm going, this is really nice. I'm comfortable. So I didn't get
the smell alone must have been, oh, good God,
You guys have anything else to say about your directorship or what? I'm anxious. I like his progression as a director and the choices he makes and what he's going to film and how, and I think he puts them together really well.
Yeah.
They're well-made movies. You may not like the genre. You may not like the movie, but they're well-made. They are well-made.
Yes.
He knows what he's doing.
Am I the only one here who hadn't seen United 93?
I have seen it.
Did you see it?
I have seen it.
Okay.
It's It was good, and it's obviously a very tough movie to do and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I herald him for taking on the project and doing that, and it got really good reviews. I couldn't get the courage to do it. That's bottom line. That's all.
And I think to go back to John, you had mentioned that it was four different kind of styles in this movie, and I applaud Paul for pulling off each style, because we see a little bit of action when the hijacking is taking place. Mm-hmm. Then we see the documentary side when he's in the little lifeboat. And then we see the drama kind of movie at the end when he's having all these emotions. So he touched upon so many different elements of different types of films all in 2 hours.
Yeah. I think one thing to note, like as we're saying, John, you had said that Tom Hanks, Captain Phillips, was watching everything unravel. Yeah. I also was getting the sense that he was beginning to unravel as well. Sure. He had, because when he was on the ship, he was actually sort of kind of calm, cool, collected. Everything he did was precise, you know, and even when he got into the lifeboat, even when he said, tell my wife I'm in seat 15C, like he was thinking, he was still smart. He still had his wits about him, but I think slowly but surely he's starting to unravel.
He even says it. He says, there's no way you're going to this Molly Coast. He knows that before they let that happen, they're going to blow us out of the water.
Yeah.
So he knows he's dead too.
Yeah.
So I think that's what, and he's just, well, what am I going to do?
What am I going to do?
Let's write the damn note and let's go after the, that's it. Because that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Find out to the end. You might as well go out in a blaze of glory.
I agree. Definitely. So, but it was handled great. Again, Paul Greengrass. To Paul Greengrass's credit. Mm-hmm. You, as an audience member, you got to see that unravel right in front of your eyes, and it played out great.
Yeah. So, all right, we're going to move on to editing.
Editing.
Phil, jump in here.
Hello,
Phil.
Everybody.
As an editor, I can speak to this.
Well, Christopher Rouse, right? He won an Oscar for Bourne Ultimatum for editing. Mm-hmm. As Dimitri mentioned, they've been Paul and him have been working for a while, and you know the style and the pacing I thought worked. Worked really great. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that editing and things like that, it's tough to talk about when it's done well because you don't really notice it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know, but I thought I thought the way it was paced and, again, I think the script was written so well that when you do these sort of things and when, you know, when things are acted well, it makes an editor's job easier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then you're really kind of sculpting rather than sometimes you have movies where
you're really creating.
Yeah, you really have to create and come up with the story and things like that. And so that's where the fun begins of with editing. Hey, wouldn't it be fun if we switched this around or whatever? And I think, you know, where it's most evident of where they had that kind of leisure of, okay, being able to try out different things is when you had, you know, the captain of the Navy, you were on the lifeboat, and you had the negotiator and you had, you know, all these guys coming in. And so how you timed and paced that, that's where the real skill of the movie happened.
For me, that, when you're just speaking to that point, was when we were on the boat, we were on the lifeboat and we'd been on for one or two times. But it was the jump. I just this one part on the lifeboat where I was going, I'm just getting, I need to, and boom, right when I started to feel like we need to get out of there, they cut to the black Suburbans going on the tarmac and everybody getting on the F-60, whatever the heck it is, the big, huge plane. The
helicopters. Yeah, plane. Yeah.
And I went, oh, okay, there, yeah. So for me, the timing on that was wonderful because it was well-paced. It was, the juxtaposition was great. So the cutting back, and for me, it worked, certainly on an editing level.
Well,
yeah.
Also, you know, I mean, speaking about Christopher, he got his start back in 1979 as an apprentice editor for I read this wrong. I thought it said Air Force One, but it says A Force of One.
Yeah, that's much different. That's much different.
Much different. But, you know, but I mean, he's done so many movies in terms of these actions. I mean, Be Cool, The Town, Italian Job, Paycheck, Bourne Supremacy, United 93, The Bourne Ultimatum, Green Zone, and then, you know, obviously now Captain Phillips.
Yeah, I get the feeling he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and Phil, like, I will just, like, I think that it's, yes, if there's bad editing, it's easy to talk about, but I think if there's really good editing, I think that that's just as easy to talk about because if you're going into the movies like we are, and we're here to dissect these movies, you know, when it's good editing in a movie that's 2 hours and 15 minutes and the pacing just works and it builds, part of that is because of the editing and the shots that he's using to do that and to juxtapose, you know, light and you know, vast into the island and then the small boats juxtaposed to the, you know, all that stuff, the cat and mouse game going on the big boat, you know, that only works because of, you know, really good taut editing and piecing things together.
I think Phil's point, and I agree with this point, is that sometimes it's hard to talk about because really good editing you don't necessarily see or are aware of. You are aware of bad editing.
Absolutely.
You start to go, what the heck is going on here? But when it's so seamless that you aren't even aware, it's almost like the imprint is taken off, and rather than see any of the edit, it's just the story's just unfolding, and you're not even aware of it. So that's why it's kind of hard to talk about, because how do you talk about something
but also,
that's
you
so
know,
seamless and with, unseen?
You know, it's also the choices of music and things like that, and obviously that's not the solely the editor.
Yeah. Sure.
But I mean, there's some really fun songs in there. I mean, not a lot of music, you know, obviously it's mostly score, but the fact that Eric Clapton, you know, has a song in there. I thought that was great.
Well, wonderful tonight. Unless you have anything to say about editing, let's move on to music since you brought it up. Sarah?
I mean, I was going to kind of just chime in more to your point of view that I did like how they captured everyone's kind of different viewpoints, like the lights in particular on the shot of the lifeboat, how you get their angles versus how the clarity that the giant ship is getting, yeah. or even when Captain Phillips is in the water and you get the different shots of going back and forth of who's in the water, and part of you wants to think, can't you tell? But how they edited it, how they shot that, keeping some people in the dark at certain points and some people having these visuals, I really liked it. And just I think that they captured the ocean really well, which is hard, and size and light, all good.
Yeah, it was pieced together
very
well.
I don't know if this goes to any slightly editing, but I have a question about this. Is the only thing that I thought was, it wasn't bad. I remember as it happened, I'm going, that's interesting. They chose to go under the boat, under the ship, excuse me, and when it was turning 30 degree to port or whatever it was, and they're trying to evade the pirates when they first, I'm going, well, I always thought that was a strange choice. Why? I mean, it was weird to go underwater to see the rudders
and them.
It's like, what's that all about?
You know? It was the Titanic shot.
Yeah, I don't know that we needed that, but it was kind of editor's choice, I assume. It was just kind of like, I guess we got it, but I was like, I don't even know.
Honestly, it might be hard because those ships, it's hard to, like, they
can't turn in a dime.
Making it important that they are trying everything they can to get away, I think it's just like, that's the, not the easiest, but the best way to illustrate that they're really
the power maybe of the ship, you know, because it was another great line.
Don't know how a ship turns.
There was another great line where Captain Phillips says, "We need a bigger wake." You know, push it all the way up,
that was not that. This was when they were just trying to board, so they're on the side there. So I was like, okay, whatever. But it's just and by the way, I didn't think the shot looked that great. It was GC.
There you go.
You thought it was CG? Yeah, it probably was CG. Yeah, CG, maybe. I don't know.
GC? GC.
CG.
All right, but I liked it. It showed that they did know what they were doing and how to try to technically evade them, even though it's still. Happened.
Yeah, but doesn't it look pathetic? I felt really bad for them because what are you guys, water cannons? And granted, these are four guys with guns and a ladder.
With no backup ammo, too.
Exactly. And they made it on board. Now you got it. And of course, you know, the international law says, you know, commercial ships can't have any kind of weaponry on them. So I get that part of it. But it just seemed like this is the best. And then they had the pirate cages.
Right.
That just get shot away because their stupid padlock is on it. I'm like, this is pathetic. This is really pathetic that this is your defense mechanism.
And again, I just go back to our conditioning to how we watch action movies.
Exactly.
You wouldn't buy it. Like, you'd go, there's no way this is going to happen. Yeah. But it happened. Yeah. So
multi-billion dollar conglomerates. And this is
it's
how
really like when the boat was leaving port, too, you know, there was no fanfare. There's no, you know, I did like that. I saw something that I'm not akin to. And, you know, we talk about different captains and this is a blue collar. This is his job, and he goes out for 3 months at a time, and he shows up, and there he is, and then he puts on his polo shirt, and he's on deck, and you know, there's none of the militaristic formalities that they had on this. Like, there was some, but not...
Barely. Only because
they didn't even salute.
No, but they certainly defer to him.
Sure,
for
captain,
but it's
absolutely.
Like, yeah. And, you know, when he's running the drill, it's like everybody's like, fine, drill.
Yeah.
No, I loved that point. I think that very real.
Me too.
No,
that's my point.
It.
I think it's great.
I thought it was great. And it really showed me something that I'd never seen before. Yeah. Because you got to figure that on all these big cargo vessels.
Right.
That's probably the way that
it is,
you know?
Yeah. They said most of them are
so routine.
Yeah.
It's
so.
Wait, life is.
And, you know, but that's a job. And how do you, then I was thinking, how do you get that job? Like, and how much does it pay? And, like, you know, what are the benefits? And, but, like, how do
and
you.
And do they get hazard
you know,
pay?
I know that.
No,
yes,
not.
Too.
No, that's why I don't want to be here.
You know, and I know that Captain Phillips himself, he gave up a pursuit for international law to study at the Maritime Academy.
Wow. Yeah.
And even before graduating, he was a Boston cab driver. But I want to know how you
So that's what prepared him for the pirate.
There we go.
Okay.
It all makes sense.
I want to get into the music a little bit, sure, because Phil had mentioned it. And I got to say, I don't remember any song from this. I don't really remember much of the score, to be honest with you. The only thing I remember is after all the, spoiler alert, after all the pirates get shot, the music stops.
Nice.
That, I remember that.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
And other than that, I know it was effective because it certainly added to the excitement and the energy and the you know, all the fun stuff.
I thought it was great because up until the point where the pirates got shot, it felt like a movie. But then when everything just cuts out, it just all became real. Mm-hmm. And it was a moment of pure silence and kind of shock that he was going through. And even Captain Phillips himself said that time was skewed for him. It felt like 5 minutes, even though the whole execution process took about 7 to 8 seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I would agree. The music didn't really stick out to me. It's like now we're kind of hearing this music playing. Yeah. It's kind of like the new age, very much a new age pirate song. But I don't remember it. It's giving me that feel, but I did not hear that during the movie.
Yeah, you didn't? Yeah.
I remember thinking that I really did like how they were executing the ocean and how they were executing just every time it would get hit by a wave and you would get the jostling and those sound effects I thought were great. I did notice, I think it was when maybe the Navy SEALs were coming in or something, we did get that normal big lounging, rolling beat. So I noticed that part in the silence, but throughout most of the movie, didn't hear much of it. And I wasn't bothered by that.
No, not at all. I thought it was extremely effective because I know it was working because it was energizing me and I was tense. It was thrilling. It was exhausting. So it was effective. I just wasn't really aware of it.
Yeah.
Until that. And when it cuts out, you just, oh.
Yeah, it's not there. Yeah, I'm going to say kudos to Phil for putting that bed. Why did you shut it off? That was good. That was good thinking.
It ended.
There you have it. Yeah, for me, the music, again, I think I'm in agreement with everybody here. I was thinking about, when we talked about Gravity last week,
right.
Mm-hmm. Where music was very integral to a soundless atmosphere.
Right.
And here, I really didn't notice the music at all.
And I'm wondering, because we talked about it in editing, is it because it was so good that it affected you, but you weren't aware of it? Is that a good thing?
It could be, but this is a guy too, Henry Jackman. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy's done X-Men First Class. He's done Wreck-It Ralph. This Is the End. G.I. Joe Retaliation. He's done big films where music plays a
lot of variety there.
Right. And, you know, he's done the Kick-Ass movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this movie, I felt, I guess it was so subtle that there was nothing that's stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. So whether it was there or wasn't there, mm-hmm. There was nothing.
Certainly appreciated that because mm-hmm. For me, that made me more in the story because I wasn't going, wow, listen to that music.
And also because the music score wasn't that subtle, I thought the ocean was pretty subtle too because mm-hmm. you're out on a humongous ship, but we didn't hear crashing of waves every single minute, and mm-hmm. I thought the environment that they were in, it was pretty clean, ironically.
Yeah, but when we're on the little Somali skiffs, yeah. like yeah. that, you got the sense of water in your face. Yeah, the sound effects were really great.
Like Sarah was saying, but the sound, especially that damn siren horn, whatever.
Oh,
it was,
my
like battleship God. Up on a lifeboat. It's like
fantastic.
Yeah, that was just amazing. So, Phil, you have anything to say you want to add to this part?
Well,
of the
you know, just even listening to that, what I thought was great. You know, mm-hmm. it's got it's keeping a beat.
Yeah,
you know, so that's you know, you could say that's our hearts kind of you know mm-hmm. pacing, and then it has that slow kind of build every so often, and so you know, it almost puts you on edge where you know you show you what's going to happen now. And so, you know, just to listen, you know, when you really dissect it at that level, I thought, you know, I get it. And mm-hmm. and again, it is subtle, but listening to it, you're like, wow.
There you go.
There you go.
We've already talked cinematography. Does anybody want to add to that? We've kind of talked about that. But what the look of it, production design, anything?
No, I think covered, you know, the realism. I think the realism of this movie is what sets it apart and what takes you out of what we're normally can, again, I use that, I mm-hmm. got to think of another word, but what we're conditioned to see. Ultimately, this, albeit it's based on a true story, it still has action elements to it.
Yeah.
You know, heavy drama, you know, through the cinematography, I think it sets it apart. Again, I say that it sets it apart more so than even the Bourne movies because it's based on a true story. I felt as if this were playing almost in real time.
Well, yeah, because you couldn't, like in the Bourne movies, you could, when they do all those quick cuttings and those fight sequences, you couldn't do that here. And,
no.
Because then it would be hyper-real.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they certainly were effective in their choice of being
very effective.
To the production aspect of it, you know, they visited museums and things like that to make sure they got the look of the lifeboat correct and everything was, you know, to size and proportion. And obviously they had to figure out, okay, how are we actually going to shoot in here? But
right.
It seemed like they took a lot of Pilates classes.
And also the environment that they were shooting in, there was a line where Captain Phil says, you know the ship, they don't.
Yeah.
Right. And they actually did. I love the technical aspects of it. They know, they showed us where the engine room was. They showed us where the control room was and just the
sneaking
the,
around.
Yes, the atmosphere that they were in, but we didn't know as an audience, but we were led to, we found out all these different locations that they were in, and I liked how they were actually real.
But did you know where the engine room was? Because I was going to say.
And then they showed the map too. I'm like, oh, okay, I can understand where they're going with all around the ship. And I think they used the atmosphere to the storyline and how they were hiding. I was like, this is real.
The lighting was great too. In those scenes where they were playing cat and mouse. And I thought that the lighting was used to great effect on the lifeboat. Mm-hmm. That it was fantastic.
The lights coming through.
Yeah, very well. Very well.
Well, I mean, I feel like I kind of talked about lighting. So if I can, if anyone doesn't have
anything to say,
I kind of want to switch it over to some of my favorite moments or scenes from the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I looked back at what I wrote down and what I really noted, and it ended up being some of the places that I felt like the audience got most engaged. I'm not saying they were the best moments, but just things. So one, when we first saw the attachment of that ladder how that played out, just them, you're just hoping one of them doesn't make it on the ship or something.
Is that funny? Because you know they get on the ship, but you know it happens, but everybody in the audience is going, no,
last
no,
one,
no,
exactly, last no, one, you exactly. can't get in.
And you see this makeshift ladder, you know they've been welding the knife, it's like, please, no. Yeah.
And we could tie that into editing too, because they kept on going back to Tom Hanks, who, as an audience member, is like going,
because
you know,
as soon as they get on,
they're toast.
And just the whole thing with the water cannon being out there and everything, oh my god, been trying to get that put back together, and then blasting out
on the bridge, not running for their lives, and you're just like, okay, well they're gonna make it on, so you better go get safe. And he's still trying because he still has that hope that the ladder's not gonna attach.
That's a great scene because everybody in my audience was just don't get. And the thing is, you know that he's gonna get on the ship. But
that's a sign of a good
movie.
Yeah.
And then the desperation again, jumping on, and it's like, my god, they're so easily been dead if they didn't catch it.
Yeah, and just one slip of that ladder, they lose that in the ocean. Mission done. Go back to the coast,
And then, like, directly from there, then we get propelled to, as someone mentioned earlier, to the bridge where we get this meeting of the two captains, which is a great moment. Mm-hmm. And you obviously get some memorable lines and exchanges.
I'm the captain.
And they're just eye contact maintained throughout, and their relationship throughout the movie is great and really established in that meeting. The next one I watch is a lot later, but it is the boarding of the lifeboat, where he does get pushed and kicked to the ground. You see the drop.
But before that, can I just say, didn't everybody in your audience go, do not get on that boat?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, no, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And everyone just kind of sunk with the boat at the end of the water. You're just like,
And
now, what are we going to do?
Exactly. When the little lifeboat hits the water, I think that's a great, everybody
moment.
Sinks at that moment.
And then we got a change. I'm like buzzing through these.
Go ahead.
And we got a change with the arrival of the Navy. And for me, it was really the heightening of the Navy SEALs jumping out, and you get the air shot where they're just diving, and you can tell the precision and just the power and the force that people have prepared for. And they're diving in, and you're wondering if they're going to go straight to save him or if they're going to have to meet up against instructions. And there's that hope and that cheer for, like, stand up for the one guy left.
You almost want them to just, land on the thing, start blasting, we get him out of there.
Wonderful moment. And then finally, the aftermath, I think, is what just seals this whole movie as a great film.
Yeah.
And a key part of that being that for the military, this ended the moment they got Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for Tom Hanks or Captain Phillips, it wasn't anywhere near the end.
No.
This is something that's going to affect him for the rest of his life. And seeing them just walk away, turn everything off, versus him who it finally really hits him. It's like he's finally survived and doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
He's taking its toll. And that counterposition of those two
that's
forces.
What I thought was great. Mm-hmm. I love seeing those SEALs. They're just packing their equipment, walking right
no
back.
No one really asked.
Job it's done.
A, breaking down the set.
They're time to go home. Cup of coffee, or get some beers or whatever it was. And I'm going. And I thought that was so damn cool. By the way, did their thing.
Yep.
Did their job, and then no fanfare because this is what we do.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great, but I agree completely with Sarah that right after that, then they're done, and he's a wreck.
This isn't the end.
Yeah.
So those were some like the main moments that stood out to me. I think that we've all established that there's some really good acting moments, particularly in the lifeboat. I think Musée's monologue about how he has to keep going, about how everything's going to be okay. All of those were great moments. And I mean, we've touched on most of it, I think.
Since you just mentioned, I want to talk a little bit about... let's say Elmy, I think is his name, the second bad pirate, as opposed to Muse.
See the psychopathic?
Yeah. The psychopath. Yeah.
Another village.
I thought he was very effective because without having that loose cannon, the lifeboat would have been much different.
It would have been. Yeah. I think decisions
were different.
Different
decisions
were going to be made.
And, I honestly believed he was going to shoot the guy in the beginning because I thought they wanted to establish their authority and their superiority. I thought he was just going to.
I agree.
And
he was going to end it at any moment.
I did. And I thought, if he had done that, then if he had, and again, it's not true, but if he had done that on the bridge when they first met and he'd just taken that guy out, imagine how you would feel when he'd put that gun with Tom Hanks' head on the lifeboat.
And that's another thing, too. When you bring that scene up on the bridge of the boat, I think if it were a Die Hard movie, right? That guy would have. I'm giving you 5 seconds, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mm-hmm. Bang, that guy's in real life, though it doesn't play out that way. And I think it was you, John, that said, let's go back to the lifeboat. Mm-hmm. Once they got Musée off the boat, the dynamic inside that lifeboat radically changed, and not for the good.
No.
And
cannons are in control. Who's going to go up against them?
Here's why I think ultimately, even just story wise, why. Killing anybody, it would have defeated Captain Phillips' mission.
Sure.
And you would have been like, oh.
I honestly hated
the pirates and I wanted them dead.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring my gun and be like, you mother effers.
Yeah. I did not feel that way.
Oh, that guy I did. The psychopath.
Okay, the psychopath.
But I do got to say, having that loose cannon, aside from editing and everything that's already going on, he was another person that kept everyone engaged in the storyline, and he progressed the story forward.
I just thought that was a smart choice to have the loose cannon. It was, I thought it was a great the look of that guy being a little bit taller, a little bit
more
menacing,
stronger, menacing, and his wild eyes and everything. And I thought
two of their wild eyes.
Yeah,
for me, I thought that was great because it also made Musée even a little bit more measured and more not sinister, but calculating in how he was going to do this.
Exact word I was thinking about.
And I liked that.
His brain's
a lot.
Engaged from the beginning of this movie all the way to the end.
And it was Psychopath, too, if I remember correctly. It was Psychopath that had the gun. Psychopath works. We know who we're talking about. He had that gun to Tom Hanks' head, and it was pressed so hard into his head when he pulled it off. You could just see
they
the indent.
Breaking Bad, right, Phil?
Oh.
What's that?
No, they stole it from Breaking Bad, didn't they?
They stole it from many movies.
I know, just kidding. But that was
I also like, he didn't have anything to do in there. Whereas you have one guy just
steering the ship.
One guy occupied with his boat, the other guy steering, and the other guy just trying to formulate a plan. Mm-hmm. This guy is just like, all right, this is annoying.
But more concerned about how they're playing with us, and they don't take us serious, they don't respect us, and
it felt like his foundation was in the fact about how he wanted to be viewed and how he was viewing the situation. I felt that all of his choices, it wasn't, I'm going to be the bad guy. It was going to be, no, this is how you gain power.
Yeah.
You
gain
power by force, and I'm going to force you to respect me.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
It's good acting.
Absolutely.
Good motivation.
For me, that's what I'm saying.
Director.
I think because it was it's, well, I think Tom did a great job, and because Musée did such a good job, I think this guy's the unsung hero for me.
Yeah.
Only because not many people are talking about his acting mm-hmm. effort as they are about the other two, and rightly so, because you see those two guys going at it, so right. normally you would, but without this guy's psychopathic look and his demeanor and stuff, I just think things would have been much different. It helped ramp that up.
Yeah, and it lends a presence mm-hmm. in a very small contained space. It adds a very thick fog that, you know, you didn't exactly know how things might end.
No, yeah. No. The one thing I was wondering, and I'll put this to you guys. So once Musée is taken off and now he's on the battleship and he's kind of surrounded. We are on the lifeboat. We don't come off the lifeboat. Pretty much, we go, but we never see Musée again until everybody's taken down. And I thought that was an interesting choice because I wanted to see the moment where he realizes, "Uh-oh, I'm not getting off this boat."
See, I
just wanted a little. I was like, "Oh God, it would be great to come back to him and realize, oh shit."
I have a feeling that once he was being brought on the boat, mm-hmm. that. I there was a look on his face that sort of kind of said, okay.
See, I never got that look. I didn't. If he did it, great. I'm glad he did. I just never saw it. But because we were with him for so much of the movie, and then I didn't get to see any of that turn or how it affected him or how when he realized it. We only got to see the moment at the end. And I just wanted, you know, because part
you of, wanted the reaction.
I did. I wanted to realize, because I think he went there thinking that he is going to get his millions or that he's going to get out of this somehow.
He was going to meet with the elders.
The whole thing about, I can't go back. I'm in this. I have to see it through. And then to see that realization come over him saying, oh, I'm not going to be able to see
it. I think he had that once he noticed he was being surrounded. Yeah, there was a look on his face that was like.
I wanted, because I think he saw that. But I still think at that moment he was still thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, the elder's going to get
out. You wanted the full quote.
So wanted to see a little bit more because he was such a good actor and he was so effective the whole time. I wanted to see
his. Was that your favorite? Well, what was your favorite scene?
The end. I just thought that was such a full, well-crafted, well-acted scene. And the Corman, I think that's what the term they use for her. She's a Corman, I think, even though she's a woman, she's called a Corman. But anyway, if I'm saying it wrong, I apologize. But the fact that she's not an actress and just was doing her job and then juxtapose that with him not being able to speak, and you can see the whole thing overwhelming him. And I thought he was masterful in that. But she was just as good. If not for her precision and her doing her business and him being able to do his, mm-hmm. I just think the two of them made that scene really just so amazing. And for me, the whole movie, it was just elevated by that scene.
I agree.
I completely agree. And to add to a little bit, because we see Tom Hanks being Captain Phillips in shock and awe and he's literally rendered speechless. Mm-hmm. And then we see the Corman being emotionless as well. So there was a whole just a balance there that one person's really emotional, one person's stoic. I think that was a nice balance in how they pitted them against each other in that way.
Mm-hmm. To me, I get more and more amazed at the routineness of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. What do you mean, routineness of all of what?
Well, meaning like, okay, so, you know, it rendered him speechless, as Marissa said, but the world, you know, even within his vicinity, continues as if
this is their job.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw him very procedural.
Yeah. You know, but I understand that, and I so don't want to spoil Hurt Locker. Well, okay. Never mind.
All right.
Okay, well, why? Spoil it.
No, that's all right. We'll move on to something.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, for me, I had, of course, for me, there was one scene in the lifeboat when shortly after the first big Navy ship comes in,
mm-hmm.
and it's an outside shot, and you see the immenseness of the thing. And then, like, it just looks like this mug compared to, like, that couch.
Yeah, exactly.
It was, and the way that it was shot, the way that the shot was composed, I was like, wow. And that whole scene, too, with the horn blaring, that was amazing.
Doesn't really matter, but that was the one where I went, wow, you can obviously see that CG'd.
It just, did you?
Yeah, it just stuck out to me. Ouch.
Despite if it was CG or not, I liked how they showed that shot because it showed the audience that these pirates really are really not going to win.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We have three big carriers, big vessels going after this little thing, it showed that they have no chance of getting out of this.
But I think it was great because in the beginning, you saw them in these stupid little runabouts, and you thought, how are they ever going to board this thing? And then they did. And then you juxtapose that with that little lifeboat, and this time you go, oh, yeah, they're not really
Yeah, you're not going to miss it all. And again, though, I go, like, what was their conditioning to actually think that at that point?
Yeah.
Like, the other two ships hadn't even... The ride, Bainbridge shows up. The other two ships hadn't shown up yet.
Yeah.
And at that point, well, how are they thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to win?
I think because
what else can you
what
think?
What else can you do? Yeah. I just got to get
give up.
I got to get home because, hope you know, it's, give up. But what? I'm going to go to prison. If at least I keep going, maybe, you know.
Yeah, to me, there wasn't even a maybe in that. But
I agree. But
I also loved the scene leading up to the bedlam and chaos inside the lifeboat, to the shooting of the pirates. I thought that was very taught and put together. It's very emotional,
green, all that kind of stuff.
And the way that it was put together, and then we were in effect, we as the audience were in effect blindfolded as much as Tom Hanks was, because we didn't see the bullets on impact.
No,
we heard it. We saw a lot of blood.
Yeah.
And so much like Tom Hanks, and then like his blindfold comes in done, and he's like got all this blood over him, and he just starts flipping out.
Yeah.
Very primal. Oh my head. It was amazing. And then, I just really enjoyed how that led to him being taken off the boat and the way he was walking. And it was funny because even at that point, and this is where Tom Hanks was fantastic, he was still trying to have a normal conversation.
Yeah, he's trying to be normal.
Oh, yeah. You know. And it wasn't until he sits down, he just loses it. That, to me, you know, that was where his performance was fantastic.
And it was also accurate, because what brought it up is she was asking him, well, how did you get this? Yeah. Those questions being so prime, like, what is this? Mm-hmm. It just clicks those memories. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was in the writing, in the storytelling, it prompted such the emotional display we got to see and witness.
One thing we got to get to before we get to our big controversy. We didn't talk about how it's being received. We know it did well in terms of its numbers. I should say in terms
We've
of
We've mentioned all
numbers.
The buzz it's got.
Well, yeah, but I what's the response? What's
critical acclaim thus far? If I remember, my memory serves on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at like a 93%, which is great.
Again.
You know, and again. Oh, the other great thing, too, what was cool about this movie, PG-13, you know, but it's really not catered to young teenagers, right? But it works really well. Cinema score, I believe, was somewhere around an A- for this movie.
IMDb is 8.0.
8.0, which is, like, really good. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people are really liking it, and I think for Sony... Mm-hmm. You know, I think the 25.7 that they had for their opening weekend is a really big win. I think the cinema score, I think all the reviews, I think people like us talking about it, I think it'll perpetuate, you know, more business. Maybe not, you know, not to the tune of Gravity, because Gravity opened up so big. This is a different movie. It's a little bit
has longer legs.
It could be. I mean, we are, you know, the runtime. The 2-hour and 15-minute runtime, you know, could affect it a little bit later on down the line. But we don't have too much competition. It doesn't have that much more competition. You got The Escape Plan and Carrie opening up this weekend, which isn't the exact audience for this. You know, Gravity is still out there, so that's still going to take in some audience. Within the next couple of weeks, I'm not entirely sure. I forget what other movies are coming out, but I think until like November... Mm-hmm. You know, which is a couple of weeks away, is when we really start to, you know, movies like Ender's Game start coming out. So I think that it'll last. It'll ride the tide, so to speak. And I think that it won't be forgotten come Academy time. You know,
Sarah.
I think it'll stay in people's consciousness.
I think that a lot of what I'm going to say is going to be a comparison to Gravity. Because I think Gravity coming out just whatever, a couple weeks ago, it was all about advertising media. That was what really was getting people in the seats. For this, I feel like it's been word of mouth. I feel like it's people saying, you know, I think this is, for like an actor movie, I think this is the buzz. These people are going to be nominated. You need to go see it. I think it's more on the audience end that people are getting pushed to go.
And also, this is based on a true story. People sure. do know that this really happened. And
but do you think that'll hurt? Because I've seen, no, I already know it's...
I think it might help or hinder because mm-hmm. people who know it's based on a true audience might not want to see that. But people who do, they would go out of curiosity to see how it happened, how it all went down.
It's interesting that you brought that up because on one of the websites I looked at and doing research, okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. In one of the websites that I was looking at, I always like to read the talkbacks, mm-hmm. you know, and you got to filter through them. And the very first one said, come on, this happened in 2009. Like, I already know what happened. And it was just, I thought it was an interesting comment.
Oh, my that, God.
Well, my it's question- like, but why you make it, it? Basically, that person was saying, you're making it so soon, like, we still know what happens. Like, make something... That, you know, and I thought it was an interesting comment.
Except for this, we have no idea what went on in that boat.
No.
True. No, we don't.
We don't. And we don't know the personal story behind it. So
no,
that's
I heard when this whole thing actually went down, I heard the end result.
Right.
I just remember my mom telling me they got the pirates.
Yep.
I'm like, yeah. okay.
Because that's pretty all much right. everybody yeah. remembers. Oh,
that's
a horrible thing.
That's all the audience pirates. Really knows. We pirates, know the pirates. End result.
And Jack Sparrow's in Somalia? What?
But you know what, though? In a sense, we can't say that we didn't know what happened in the lifeboat only because we never read the book.
Well, exactly.
For the people who read the book, and you know,
didn't.
A lot, yeah. I mean, yeah. I forget how it yeah. stacked up on right. the New York Times bestseller list, mm-hmm. but, you know, there are a faction of people out there who, you know, I didn't read the book. Mm-hmm. So, but I just tying into what you were saying about mm-hmm. audience and it was an interesting comment that somebody yeah. pointed out. It's that, you know. Yeah.
Phil, we got to jump into the controversy, and I want you to start this off for us.
Well, for me, I'm learning more and more about the controversy, and I think certainly Dimitri and Marissa.
Okay.
Marissa in particular, she wants to really talk about this. But for me, I wanted to really hold off on that because I wanted to discuss the movie. The movie was so great for me that I don't want to have it tainted by... You know, the negative, and as Dimitri already pointed out, you know, this isn't meant to be journalism exactly. It's based on a true story.
True story.
You know what? We could slap on inspired by a true story if you really want,
mm-hmm.
you know? but so for me, knowing that there is controversy behind it, I think,
But did you know that before you saw the movie?
I did not.
Okay, so.
See, I didn't know about that there was controversy because I saw the movie, I enjoyed it, and then I heard there was controversy after I saw them, and okay. I was like, oh, that's more interesting.
Okay, Marissa, since Marissa, you know more about this. So let's talk about the controversy. And now this is the controversy. It has nothing to do with the actual – well, you go ahead. Explain what the controversy is about.
Well, they've been saying that because the film depicts Captain Phillips in such a good light and the crew members, because I noticed in the film that we don't get the crew's reaction mm-hmm. to how everything went down afterwards, and made me think – why is that?
Right.
And when I heard that there was controversy, the crew members are suing the merchant
Maersk.
Maersk, saying that they had a what was it called? A conscientious disregard to safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, willful and wanton conscious disregard for the crew's safety.
For the crew's safety.
In this particular incident.
Yeah.
And they're also saying that Captain Phillips had ignored piracy warnings, that he had several emails mm-hmm. warning them that there was high risk of mm-hmm. being hijacked by these pirates. Mm-hmm. And then he disregarded those, didn't inform the crew properly. And there were warnings that they should... sailed the ship 600 miles away from the coast, mm-hmm. but they were significantly closer to the Somali coast than they should have been.
240 miles.
Mm. And so there was a lot of factors that we as an audience wouldn't think about, but I guess really did happen. And there's a lot of... I think they're more mad on the fact that they didn't touch upon those.
So is the controversy about the movie or is the fact that the book didn't talk about that?
No, I think... Well, I think a lot of the controversy is... according to reports,
okay.
I never met Captain Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
He was not liked by a lot of the crew.
No,
a lot of captains aren't.
But right, but he wasn't liked. And to Marissa's point, that you know he disregarded a lot of the rules. But it's interesting because there were like seven or eight emails. One of the biggest voices in this is that guy, the chief engineer.
Sure, right.
Mm-hmm. In fact, in 2000, in 2010, he did a CNN interview. Mm-hmm. That I got to see. And, you know, he's like, basically, he goes, yeah, it's a joke that, you know, he's coming out with his book. He thinks he's a pirate. He goes, you know, we've been biting our tongues mm-hmm. until now. He's like, he wasn't that guy. He's mm-hmm. like, he got us in trouble. And, you know, and in the movie, that engineer is sort of kind of depicted as his friend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that later on, when Sony was putting this together, Sony paid off a lot of the crewmen to not talk about the movie right now, including that engineer. Mm-hmm. And they got from anywhere from $5,000 or up, mm-hmm. depending on how much hardball they played. But again, like, they were saying that he took our lives in danger. Mm-hmm. You know, he was 240 miles, which I believe Captain Phillips in interviews mm-hmm. had originally said he was 300 miles. He was rounding up mm-hmm. very liberally, according to reports. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the movie, there's that scene in the mess hall mm-hmm. where one guy says, how come we're not, like, we could be over 100 miles away from this place. How come? And
he says, well, the, if we go there, there's going to be pirates there.
I don't know if that was a conscious mm-hmm. effort to sort of address a little bit of the controversy. And Captain Phillips obviously is a witness for Maersk, and, mm-hmm. you know, he's, it's a very interesting controversy. Does it factor into this movie so much?
No, I think the movie stands alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Movie. But here's the thing. I also think that would have been fascinating to put in the movie. Have a guy feel responsible that he, you know, didn't pay attention to piracy reports and got his crew in, put him in harm's way. Mm-hmm. And yeah. then I even understand it more why he gets in that boat.
Right.
Because I feel responsible. I put this on him. So I don't think that would hurt the movie if they did that. It would have been just as fine.
And that's another controversy, too, is
Wait,
how
Sarah
he...
doesn't agree. Please jump in. Why? Well,
I'm going to go back to, like, it did stand alone. It was good for me.
But my question is, absolutely it stood alone, and I agree with you, but I'm saying...
I think we're talking about two separate movies.
I know, but don't you think that would be an interesting movie?
It'd be an interesting movie, but it would be a different movie, and I probably wouldn't... This movie I will watch again.
Uh-huh.
This movie I could watch five times.
Uh-huh.
If I saw the true story and Captain
No, not the true story. I'm just saying, just change that motivation. Why does that make it a make it? Who can,
no, if you made it somewhat of a courtroom drama.
No, not a courtroom drama. I'm saying the only thing you change is it, rather than say
but
that.
You can't change one factor like that.
Yeah, you can. That's an easy motivation. You can easily change that.
No, I understand.
Believe me, I've done it many times.
But I think it would change a lot more in this film. I really do. Yeah, I think it would totally create a bigger ripple. I think it would create a bigger ripple with him, with his relationship with the crew, with how much I
Yeah, but even this relationship with the crew is barely part of it, and then they're gone, so who cares?
Yeah, exactly, because if we did see whole crew, it would have been called the Maersk Alabama, not Captain Phillips.
But, you know, they may not have been able to...
Uh-huh.
Maybe that was in the original script. I don't know.
Nobody knows.
You know, but they may not have been able to. People might be under gag orders. Like, they can't be talking about what's going on. But I was thinking in the same lines as you, as mm-hmm. maybe it makes Captain Phillips a more interesting character mm-hmm. because a hero who has flaws.
Yeah, he's a little reckless.
Yeah,
put people in jeopardy.
And again, that scene with the lifeboat.
Yeah.
Again, that engineer is like. It's like he never said, take me instead of them.
Oh, okay, really?
Oh, yeah. He even says, like, uh-huh. They took him. That's bottom line. It's like they had him.
If you switch those things, then you have that, and then he's just thrown in the lifeboat. He's not put himself there.
No. First of all, you could still say that.
Yeah.
Just because that doesn't change that. He could still say, put me in there. I'm not saying you have to change that part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could still feel... because right now we have him seeing warnings and doing something about it. So let's say he ignored warnings and then he realized, oh, crap, what did I do? He could still say, put me in there. No, don't take him. Put me. It doesn't change that.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. I think this movie, much like The Hurt Locker and much like certainly Zero Dark Thirty, is a very pro-American movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I especially with that, right? They call the United Kingdom to help them out.
Yeah.
They were like, nah, sorry. they call you the United States, and yeah. you know they're helping out. And so I think, and you know, there's so many references to America, right? There's the American flag. He's mm-hmm. like, you American, America, yeah. America, America, you know, America.
I go there
all that day. Stuff, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it was a very conscious decision to kind of. I don't want to say propaganda, but you know what I mean? I think there's those elements to elevate. Saying, yeah. Well, but I think it's a very conscious decision to elevate.
To make him a hero.
The American viewpoint,
uh-huh.
you know? And so but if he was not, quote-unquote, perfect, and if he, Captain Phillips had a few more flaws, uh-huh. then you don't get to portray that as much.
Exactly, because like many Hollywood films, you want that protagonist. You want the person you're rooting for. We want him to survive in the end. And we know that he does. But I think it, had they shown all those negative qualities about him, we wouldn't have rooted for him.
I disagree.
Yeah, I disagree. I mean, I think with the situation, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with a flawed hero if there's a way to yeah. if there's a way to smartly put that into the script. Yeah, yeah. There's nothing wrong with a
He's
flawed hero.
Two shoes, big deal.
I think the controversy is lying is the controversy is that he's being portrayed as too much of a hero uh-huh. when he really wasn't. Where there were a lot of things that they say happened.
Right.
That never happened that way.
All I'm saying, you know, I think the movie stands on its own. I don't
I
care
agree.
If it's not
yeah.
the true thing. I never expected it to be a true thing because I don't go to a movie to get my truth in terms of the story or what really the factual happenings. I also just don't think that. I think you could have just as much and just an interesting and compelling a movie if the guy had flaws and yeah. had those flaws because I don't think it changes yeah. much other than his motivation. And for me, it makes him more heroic to some degree because he realizes he did something horrible,
right.
put somebody in harm's way, and atones for it and tries to make right by it.
Yeah.
I'd still feel fine about him.
Yeah, I agree. You know? I mean, it could have. I mean, it could have been a little bit of a different movie.
Yeah.
You know, either way.
I think it would be fine.
I don't, you know, I don't criticize the direction they went
Not
in.
At all.
I thought it was very good. You know, but you know, to your point, and I agree, I mean, to have a flawed hero, if they had added something in there, mm-hmm. you know, where we know. Now, the biggest controversy to me, and Marissa, I don't know if you have this, but there
I
was
think
some...
it was the afterwards, like after everything went down, how they treated Captain Phillips. Like, he got surrounded by the Hollywood mob. They gave him key to the city.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he saw Obama.
The White House. Yeah. Everything that happened to him
sure.
as well
yeah.
after everything and how the crew was still reacting to it.
Because sure.
this is still an open case. They're still suing. It hasn't been resolved yet.
No, it hasn't been resolved. But one other controversy, and I don't know if you have it, and I think it's just as big, is, okay, so there was how much money in the safe?
$30,000
in the safe. That right? Do you realize that till this day that $30,000 is still missing?
Whoa!
Yep. Kevin Spears, a spokesman for the Maersk Line, said the missing money remains a mystery. We still don't know.
Wow!
So somebody pocketed that money.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where it is.
I imagine if I was the crew and that was what really went down with, and he was
Navy SEALs come in.
I can see why they'd be pissed off that he got such.
I don't think the $30,000 added to it. Yes, it was a factor in trying to. You know, bargain with the pirates, but it had nothing to do with the
I understand. Line. I just, it was like a little piece of
so
trivia that I thought was interesting.
Yeah. It's always interesting.
I think I had something to say like 5 minutes ago, I mean, I don't even know if it's even prevalent anymore. I mean, well, I think mine just goes back to the fact that I was carried enough by Tom Hanks and who Tom Hanks' character was in this movie, separated from history. I didn't need another flaw in him. I was carried enough by the different motivations happening between the Somali pirates and why I felt like they had these reasons and these motivations and this pressure. That was adding enough dynamics and character choice and background and all this stuff that I didn't need any more on Hanks.
Do we, since we're talking a little bit of a controversy, do we have a little bit of time
Go.
To play a little bit of a game called Fact or Fiction? Found this on a
quick
game. Yeah. Well,
like
listen, the pirates arrived. The pirates arrived while the crew of the Maersk Alabama was in the midst of an emergency drill. Fact or fiction?
I don't know.
That's fact.
That is fact.
Oh.
Yep, they were in the middle of a drill.
The movie right.
Captain Phillips faked a call to the Navy to deter pirate ships. Is that fact or fiction?
Fact.
That is fact.
Nice.
He did do that. It worked. Phillips and his crew tricked one of the pirates by laying broken glass on
fiction.
The ground.
Fiction.
Yes, I got
yep.
one.
Yes. How about Phillips is kidnapped on the lifeboat as the pirates leave the Alabama?
Fiction.
mostly fact. They actually tried to put the pirates in an open air boat first, but it didn't work. It was busted. The battery was busted. Again, real life. Just Phillips attempted to escape by swimming away from the lifeboat.
Fiction.
Fact.
Darn it.
Fact. Did. Navy SEALs took out Somali pirates while Captain Phillips was stringed up and blindfolded.
Fiction.
Part fact, part fiction. Towards the end of his ordeal, Phillips took pity on at least the young person of his captors.
Fact.
Total fiction. Before the screening of a movie, we were always adversaries. I thought it was important to make sure we both know we were adversaries in that. I thought it was important for me. This was about survival. There was no Stockholm syndrome. So, yeah. Interesting.
All right, that's it.
So, there you go.
Phil, you got last words?
There was his change of dynamic.
No last words from me.
No last words from you. Marissa, last words.
It was a great film. Go see it. Or, if you haven't seen, go see it. So.
Dimitri, last words.
Nope, I think I had it all. You know, the movie, I like the movie a little bit more than I think. I still think it's two movies. The second half of the movie
is better for you.
That's the one. Sorry. Yeah. That's going to keep you in your seat.
Disagree, one movie, NSYNC, different acts, but. I liked it. Good job, pirates.
Good job, Tom Hanks.
All right.
Good job, Tom Hanks.
And everyone else.
It'll be interesting to see with Saving Mr. Banks,
right,
which one he gets potentially nominated for.
Well, we want to know what you think, so write us and let us know.
Follow us at Movie Anatomy on Twitter. Email us at info@anatomyofmovie. And I need a new song to play, but here's Rich's outro. So thank you for listening.
Thanks. Thank you all. From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Tech, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.